This is Radio Times. I'm Artie Moscoane. It's been a good few years for TV watching. There are a number of compelling programs that treat their audience as if they're smart and want to watch sophisticated entertainment. Here are some shows on my embarrassingly long list, in no particular order. Mad Men, House of Cards, Top of the Lake, Justified, Breaking Bad, Girls, Homeland, Southland, Game of Thrones. And here's another one. A scene from a new series this season called The Americans. It's set in the 1980s in the thick of the Cold War. Elizabeth and Philip Jennings are ruthless KGB spies posing as American as an American suburban couple who have real family problems. Here's Elizabeth, played by Carrie Russell, describing how she was matched up with her husband.
I was 17 when I joined the KGB. Never had a boyfriend. They put me with you. We didn't know each other. When we got here, I was 22 years old. I was living in a strange house in a strange country with a strange man.
Well, we have invited David Biancooley once again to join us on Radio Times. He's the Fresh Air TV critic and also the founder of TVWorthWatching.com. He's written a number of books about TV shows. And David, it's a great pleasure to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Oh, this is my second home. I love being here, Marty.
Well, we love having you here. And we know that people love TV because we got such a huge response to our Facebook post of yesterday. So do give us a call about some of the shows that you have been enjoying. And that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. David, how and when did TV get so good?
It's been getting good for decades, but increasingly, I mean, this is a really good century so far for television, because it sort of like began with The Sopranos and really elevated since then. I do top 10 lists at the end of the year for Fresh Air, and I can do two of them. You know,
top 20.
Like, yes, and not feel like I'm prodding. You know, I mean, I'm padding the list at all. There really is a lot of good stuff out there, and it's kind of relentless.
Well, do you think it's the influence of cable, which I think has sort of opened up some of these narratives and stories?
Absolutely.
And even characters, maybe a more sophisticated viewing audience.
Mm-hmm. And there's a third thing: the patterns of viewership are changing, not only because people are going to cable, but because in order to get better talent, better actors, sometimes better directors and writers that won't commit to a 22-episode season, you know, cable does things in batches of 10 or 13. Miniseries do them in 6 or 4. And you can really do great work. And so all of a sudden, you're making a 4-hour movie, you know, which – you can do things that you can't in a 2-hour movie. And television is just smarter right now than most movies.
Well, and it seems to me that people can then choose what they want to watch, when they want to watch it, how they want to watch it. The viewer just has so much more choice and control over their viewing habits. And I'm wondering whether that's sort of influencing what's coming out of that box.
It is. But I'm paranoid enough. I have a fear that this is going to implode. I mean, we're in this great golden age where everybody's still making wonderful, increasingly wonderful things. But at some point,
it's all going to fall
the
apart.
Audience is going to be so fragmented that the money to make it is not going to be there. And then, you know, in this next generation, all the people who are watching television want to watch it without paying for it. But nobody's going to want to make it without being paid. So at some point, something's got to happen.
But it seems that these are – perhaps I'm just talking about myself here. But and that may be
and
true.
And that's okay.
And that's okay. But it seems that shows – these good shows really demand a certain kind of commitment from the viewer. Because I'm thinking of – Top of the Lake. If you joined that halfway through, you would not know what was going on.
Oh, absolutely.
You would just be missing so much of the narrative, so much of the character development.
And that's been going on for a while. I think the first show that I really recognized that with was Saint Elsewhere. You know, and that's more than 20 years old now. But it was where after about a year or two, the writers gave up trying to attract any new viewers or fill them in on what had happened before. If you didn't know, you wouldn't get the richness of the series. I think Mad Men right now is very much like that. You know, you can get you know, so much out of the characters now that isn't underlined for you anymore, that if you don't know the relationships and what's happened in previous seasons, you're sort of out of luck.
Well, here's a perfect segue. Speaking of Mad Men, I do want to play a scene actually from last week's show. This is where John Hamm, he's the ad man, Don Draper, pitching a new Heinz ketchup ad campaign to one of his clients. Let's listen.
Cool.
It's clean, it's simple, and it's tantalizingly incomplete. What's missing? One thing. Pass the Heinz.
You mean the Heinz ketchup?
It's Heinz. It only means one thing.
It feels like half an ad.
The greatest thing you have working for you is not the photo you take or the picture you paint. It's the imagination of the consumer. They have no budget. They have no time limit. And if you can get into that space, your ad can run all day.
Well, Pete, you said I'd say it. It's pretty bold work. I think I still want to see our bottle.
I thought that at first, too, but if you
really
think...
We will test it both ways.
It's a testament to ketchup that there can be no confusion.
Let me chew on it, fellas.
That's a scene from last week's Mad Men, and of course, Don Draper, John Hamm as ad man Don Draper. And David, it's so interesting to watch, I would say, the decline of Don Draper. I mean, you see his drinking and womanizing doesn't have the same kind of cachet.
It's exactly what we were talking about. You know, if you watched Mad Men from the beginning, when he would spin these sorts of ads and it would Don Draper magic and it would be a Kodak carousel and he would say this stuff with the same tone and the ad people would just buy it up and just lap it up, you know. But now he's spinning the same sort of things. He's throwing everything out there, but it's not being received,
no.
You know, as, oh, yes, please, like baby birds, just give me more. My mouth is open. Whatever you want, Don, is great. It's like, let me get back to you. Let me chew on this. And there's some outright rejections. And what we're watching is that Don Draper is losing his grip. But it's been such a slow decline that's the beauty of it. We are reading a novel with Mad Men.
Well, he's a character that in the beginning, I mean, we're getting to know him, and now I struggle with even liking him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does a lot of reprehensible things and treats a lot of people around him terribly. But I still like him. I still want martinis, you know, when I'm watching the show. That's how
bad. Is that how you watch the show?
No, it isn't, but I still want them. I don't – I the idea that how people did this in the 60s and did 2 and 3 martini lunches and then had afternoons, I do not have that constitution. But I envy that part of it.
Well, and it seems that everyone at this ad agency is unhappy. They're angry. They don't like their job. They have problems at home. There are a lot of problems on the screen in this film.
Yes, it's not an idyllically presented decade, you know. And we're coming in, you know, we're at that point in 1968 in the show where, you know, all hell is really about to break loose in the summer of 68, mm-hmm. You know.
And that's the very familiar voice, David Bean Cooley, our guest today on Radio Times. We did borrow him from Fresh Air. He's their TV critic, and he also is the founder of TVWorthWatching.com. And we are talking about all the stuff worth watching on TV these days, and we do want to hear from you. And that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Interesting talking about the Don Draper character. I'm also thinking of the Breaking Bad character, Nurse Jackie. You've got these lead characters who complicated lives. It doesn't even describe it. I mean,
they're not flawed. They're broken.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
And Breaking Bad is my favorite program on television. I cannot wait for its return with the final episodes. And then it's going to be over. And I don't know if people feel this way about television. I hope that they do. I hope I'm not just that weird that I'm the only one like this. But it's like when I'm reading a good novel and I get to the end of it, there's a sense of accomplishment at getting to the end of it. But I'm sad that there's no more. And I get that way with television shows. I'm still angry there's no more Deadwood, that they ended that so early. And it's like, get a life. What is that, 8 years now? You know, but I can't. I still want more of Deadwood.
Well, and that was a show that was supposed to be finished, but I think they never came up with the funds and left some things
hanging. They just stopped it to go off to do other dumber things. You know, there was no reason to stop Deadwood. That's my professional opinion.
I want to talk about Southland because I have to say Kevin Griffin, my engineer on Radio Times, he and I love this program. I love, again, these complicated characters. It's less a police procedural, LAPD right. police procedural, and more about the lives of these characters. I love the camera work. It seems like almost everything is handheld. Seems very spare. And I frankly worry about these characters when I'm not watching
them. They really are the sort of people you want to care about and worry about. And here's a Deadwood connection with Southland.
Oh.
Gerald McCraney, who is on as the alcoholic, you know, guy. I don't know how much spoiler stuff I should say, but I'll just say that Gerald McCraney guest starred on Southland and did an amazing job a few episodes ago. I mean, a really incredible acting job. And he'd also done the same sort of thing this season on Justified.
Wow.
And he did that on Deadwood. So I think these people who make really good television are watching each other's shows and saying, oh, I want that guy. And so, you know, Margot Martindale goes from
Mags.
Justified. Yeah, so she goes from Justified to The Americans, and both shows have the same executive producer, Graham Yost, so that's no accident.
Well, in fact, when she showed up, my husband and I said, oh, there's Mags.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, don't
Which
don't
be a
take
good
a
or
drink.
Bad thing.
Yeah.
What do you think about Justified?
I love Justified. You know, another show where you've got so many interesting characters. My biggest test of how much I love a show, especially an ensemble drama, is if I don't care when like five characters enter a room, which character we leave with. You know, I will follow anybody, for example, from The Good Wife anywhere. It doesn't matter if it's Kalinda or it's Will Gardner or it's Peter Florick or if it's the star of the show or if it's somebody else. All those characters are so good. I could watch like 10 spinoffs and be really happy. That's good writing and good performing.
And I love the names that they use in Justified, Raylan Givens, Boyd Crowder.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, this just whoever – we should give a shout out, of course, to the original author of those stories.
Elmore Leonard, yes.
Indeed. But nonetheless, and the sort of humor, the accent, the placing.
That show makes me laugh out loud more than a lot of comedies, but it also sometimes makes me so nervous that I'm almost – cringing. I mean, I know it's a television show. I really should. But there are times where it looks like, ooh, that must have hurt. You know, and I just get
really
that drawn into it.
Some really bad guys.
Yes.
On Justified as well. Well, we are talking about TV shows worth watching with David Bianculli, and he's the founder of TVWorthWatching.com. Also, Fresh Air's TV critic, and we're going to play some more clips from some shows that we are enjoying, and we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. What do you like on TV? Give us a call, 1-888-477-WHYY. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. Yannick Nezet-Séguin and the Philadelphia Orchestra perform Gustav Mahler's Youthful First Symphony, concerts that also include Korngold's Violin Concerto with virtuoso Hilary Hahn. Tickets at philorc.org or by phone 215-893-1999. This Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Kimmel Center, Mahler's First with Yannick Nezet-Séguin and the Philadelphia Orchestra.
I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thanks for listening to Radio Times. We're glad you enjoy what we do every day here at WHYY. If you're a member, a supporter, thanks for taking that next step to ensure that this live and long-form kind of program stays strong and healthy. If you haven't made a pledge of support, now is the time to do it. It's the spring membership campaign when each and every call is counted towards our overall goal to ensure that WHYY and all we do is in good shape. Here's that phone number. You probably know it by now, 1-888-345-9499, or the email address. You can pledge online at whyy.org. I promise you, you'll feel good about your pledge. You know where the money is going to because you are listening to it. Programs like Radio Times, Fresh Air, Morning Edition, All Things Considered. Today on Radio Times, U.S. policy and Syria, responding to President Obama's news conference yesterday, and then good stuff on TV. So make that call and make it now. Thanks very much. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. David Biancooley with us to talk about what he thinks is jumping off the TV screen. We've been playing some clips of programs as well and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Let me play a clip from Scandal. This is on ABC. It's in season two. It's a show I haven't watched, but I know people that do. Olivia Pope, played by Kerry Washington, is the high-powered head of a D.C. crisis management firm. In the scene, she's recovering in the hospital after an attack in front of her house. She's visited by the President of the United States, played by Tony Godwin, Goldwyn, whom she helped to get elected. Let's listen to this.
The nurse said you can wear these home.
You can go.
You don't dismiss me.
I don't want to talk to you. I'm never going to be ready to talk to you. So why don't you just stop saying that? You're having me followed, watched. There are cameras in my apartment. That's not love.
You have to understand. Defiance changed everything for me. Everything.
You think it didn't change me? You think it was easy? Simple? I went against everything I believed in for you. I did that for you. Everything was for you. And you walked away. You didn't even let me explain.
I thought you believed in me. I thought you thought I was good enough. I thought you saw me.
I did see you. I do see you.
No, you didn't. You don't. I wanted to win this on my own. I wanted to win it because I deserved it. I wanted to win it because I had the will of the people behind me. I wanted to own becoming President of the United States of America. I didn't want it handed to me. I didn't want you fixing it for me. That's what you do, Libby. You handle, you fix.
I was trying to help.
You don't fix me.
Wow, a scene from Scandal. Now, David, this show, there was a New York Times story about Kerry Washington. I know this is a popular show for a lot of people. I know that you've sort of soured on it a little bit.
Well, I've stopped watching it.
It's an interesting phenomenon.
It's a great phenomenon for a couple of reasons. I mean, first of all, Kerry Washington being an African American, there's only a few in the whole history of television where drama series have been carried successfully by any minority. So that is significant. Past that, it's ABC has a few of these where they're just real high-octane primetime soap operas, and you know the president is having an affair with her and there's all these stuff and people get killed and it doesn't matter and they keep going. And while I'm not totally averse to that sort of thing, it either gets me or it doesn't, and after about 4 or 5 weeks I say, okay, I'm watching so many shows as it is, I'll let this one slide. But if someone wants to call up and tell me I got to get back into Scandal, I'll listen.
And that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Let's see what that looks like. CJ from East Oak Lane has to say. CJ, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Good morning. How are you, Marty?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I do not like Don, and I've never liked his wife. I don't like the way they treat their children. I don't know. I know today we say that we coddle our children too much, but the children can be on the verge of a nervous breakdown, and they treat them like, what, why are you interrupting me? Go to your room. Stop talking to me. And I just think it's horrible the way that those characters act with their children.
Well, CJ, I'm glad you...
I've never been able to get into Scandal, even though I'm an African-American woman. I watch it a couple of times, and I just do not like that show.
Well, I appreciate that you called to Radio Time, CJ, because I feel the same way about how Don and his ex-wife now treat their children.
However, I do remember – I'm with you on Scandal, by the way, CJ. But with Mad Men, I actually remember laughing. This was an early episode where some of the kids were running around and they were playing with the sheet of plastic off of some dry cleaning. And they had it over their heads and they were running around and the mothers yelled at them, not because they might suffocate, but like, what did you do with the dress that the dry cleaning came in? Mm-hmm. So they were sort of a little bit more oblivious back then in the 60s to the dangers and concerns. And I think that's part of what they do by not noticing the things that we notice now as viewers about how most of these kids are crying out for help, or they're latchkey kids before there was even a name, and they just sort of like have to cope.
And the kind of coldness, I would say, that they have towards, towards their children. CJ, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let's see what Michael has to say. And Michael, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Hi, David. How are you guys?
Good. How are you?
Good. I was calling because I was just thinking about the TV shows that I love. And The Newsroom on HBO is one of them. And House of Cards on Netflix. But my question was kind of for David. It's like, if people don't have Netflix accounts, should they get them just to watch the series that Netflix is producing? Because I think that they're coming up with some really good shows, and I know they got top name people to come on and help produce their shows, especially House of Cards. I think you had David Fincher, you have Kevin Spacey and Robin Wright. I was wondering if
that's what they want, and that's the same reason why HBO and Showtime do original series, is because they want you to like get hooked on a Dexter or get hooked on a True Blood, and then come back and stay for everything else. But there is a plan B, at least right now, with Netflix, which is that the entire first season of House of Cards, which was released all at once a couple of months ago on Netflix, is coming out in a couple of weeks on DVD. So if you don't want to go to Netflix, if there's a particular series you just want, if you're just patient for 2 or 3 months, it'll show up and you can make that decision. Eventually, hopefully, Netflix will have enough things going in rotation that it'll be an easier purchase. But in the meantime, I'd say if all you want to do is get House of Cards, just wait till the DVD release, because it's imminent. It's coming soon.
Michael, thanks for the call to Radio Times. I made a face when he mentioned The Newsroom, the Aaron Sorkin.
I like it. You hate it?
I did not like it.
It's all right.
I just groused through that entire thing.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. And that one, that's a very polarizing series.
It is.
But I did like it. But I even accept the things that people hate about it. And I like it in spite of those. I'm not saying those flaws are not in there.
Let me play something else actually that you picked, David, and this is Modern Family. It's an ABC show, and in this clip we're going to hear 5-year-old Lily, the adopted daughter of Mitch and Cam, explain herself to her dads and aunt. Let's listen.
So Gloria was telling us about something that you said, something about you being gay.
What about it?
Okay, very aggressive, just saying. Well, we're just wondering, you know, why did you say that?
Because I'm gay.
But why do you think you're gay, sweetie?
We're learning about it in school.
Oh.
My friend Aldo's parents are Italian, so he's Italian, and you and Daddy are gay, so I'm gay.
Oh! First of all, adorable, but that's not how it works. When Aldo's talking about him being Italian, he's talking about his heritage.
Yeah, and that's a totally different thing than being gay. See, heritage is, it's something that you're born with. And oh my God, what's wrong with me?
And with respect to your heritage, you're not gay. You're Vietnamese.
What's that?
Well, Vietnam is a beautiful country, and it's near China.
It's known for its farms with all of the
water buffalo
and the bikes. Lily,
oh,
there are bikes
there
everywhere.
Are so many bikes.
So many bikes.
People are biking around, and they're wearing hats. They have these beautiful sun hats.
That's sweet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can I go and play now?
Please go. Yes.
Would you? Love for you.
David is really that's a great clip. I have to say, I haven't watched Modern Family, but after hearing that,
it's so charming and so adorable. And again, everyone, it's a very deep cast. There's three different families that are sort of intertwined and represented, and all of the characters are wonderful. All of the actors are very talented, and you didn't even need to see that to really get thrown into it. But when you watch it on television, it's just delightful.
And from your description, people address the camera?
Sometimes. Yeah, sometimes. You know, it's sort of like the old American Family thing from the 70s on PBS. I mean, it's sort of like their lives are theoretically not so much being documented as they get to comment on them from time to time. But most of it's just straightforward narrative. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of cluelessness going on that's just charming. But
yes, and funny.
These people are so endearing. And it's nice to know that good old network television can still do a couple of things well, you know, whether it's, you know, this and Good Wife. And there aren't many left. You know, cable's got most of the attention.
Well, that's David Bianculli, our guest today on Radio Times, a TV critic for Fresh Air, also the founder of TVWorthWatching.com. And we asked him to join us today on Radio Times because we believe there's a lot of good stuff on TV. We've been playing some clips and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get back to our callers. Looks like we have Suzanne from Boyertown. And Suzanne, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
This may be limited to women, I don't know, but I was at a meeting Sunday night where three of us wanted to leave in time to get home to watch Call the Midwife.
Oh no. No, unless I'm a woman too. It's not limited to just women. I love Call the Midwife.
All right. I love it. I love the historical piece that it is. The acting is superb. It's uplifting. You know, my friends and I just love it. And I think for me it may have even displaced Downton Abbey.
Oh, wow.
Because some of the messages are so profound.
I think you're absolutely right, and I would encourage everybody, because Downton Abbey managed to get a very big fan base for a public television program or PBS import. So anybody who likes Downton Abbey, seek out Call the Midwife. And again, its early stuff is available now on DVD if you have to catch up. But yes, no, it's a wonderful show, and there's no sexual lines being drawn here.
Thanks for calling into Radio Time, Suzanne. And again, you can call as well. That phone number, 1-888-477-9499. Speaking of sexual lines, it seems like there's more sex on TV.
I thought you were going to pick me up. Yes.
I would do that privately. Okay, I wouldn't do that on the radio to you, David. But it seems like there's just more sex. There's more nakedness on TV. And perhaps that's just...
You're saying that like it's a complaint.
No, I am not complaining. But perhaps that's the influence of cable.
Yeah, but I mean, it's – you know, I teach, you know, TV of the 50s and 60s and 70s, and I'm amazed at how, like, there's nothing back there that, you know, you show an episode of Archie – of All in the Family, and Archie Bunker burps and gets this huge laugh because nobody had ever belched on television before. You know, then there's a toilet flush, and it gets a huge laugh because nobody had heard a toilet. It's like, oh, please.
It's like the olden days.
So I like, you know, I mean, and yes, sometimes – even I am either old enough or conservative enough to be a little thrown by some of the things that are – like girls. There are times where I'm uncomfortable watching the sex scenes, and then I think I'm supposed to feel
that
way.
Aren't you supposed
to? Yeah, I think I am. And so then, okay, all right, okay, then I'm still here.
What do you think about girls?
I like girls. I'm amazed that I like girls. I know girls is not being made for me, but I sort of hope, even though I'm like three steps from death at this point, that if it's well written and well acted, well directed, well performed, it ought to reach me as much as it reaches, you know, a 21-year-old.
It's courageous in so many ways as well, don't
you
think?
It's
brave.
I love the fact that right now people who are making television for 2013 are either talking about trying to make their version of Girls or their version of Louis with Louis C.K. And, you know, it's because individual voices doing what they wanted to do and doing it, I think, very successfully.
I love Louis C.K.
Oh, me too.
On TV.
Me too. Favorite
I love
comedy.
His two girls too. They seem like actual real children.
Yeah, I don't think those are his actual real girls,
but they could.
Yes, they're just as bored about being there as any girls that age would be in real life.
Let's get Claudia from Mount Airy to join us on Radio Times. Claudia, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
I want to talk about the show Veep.
Veep.
Okay.
Which I watched yesterday. I fall off my chair laughing. The ensemble casts that are together to make some of these shows, the quickness, it's like watching Rosalind Russell from a movie from the 40s.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's a nice compliment, yes.
Yes, that's a pretty good compliment, right? But, I mean, it's so quick, it's so fast, and so well written. And I like this season more than last.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that, because I really wasn't totally sold on season one, although I liked the performers. Season two.
She's got more power this year.
Yeah, it's stronger. So good. I'm glad that you think that as well.
Yeah, I do. And I also, like, I really lament, like, the death of good sitcoms, because I'm somebody who loved Bilko and Car 54 and Barney Miller.
You're dating yourself.
Oh, yeah, but you're dating yourself with class, so there's nothing wrong with
David
that.
David is smiling.
Yeah.
But I love Parks and Recreation also. I think that's a really, really, really funny show. And again, it's all these hilarious, diverse people. Old people, young people, Indian people, black people. It's really cool.
Are you watching Modern Family? I'm just curious.
You know, I don't like Modern Family.
Huh.
It's a little too cute for me. It's in, all those characters.
You like Car 54, but you don't, but you don't like Modern Family, Claudia?
No, Modern Family just absolutely does not cut it for me. It's
Here's what I found, Claudia.
And thanks for the call, Claudia.
I no longer argue about the quality of comedy because it is so subjective.
That is really exciting.
You know, that I'm fine with that. I'm fine with not liking something as much as I do. But I like most of the things that you do. So
you don't want to judge your friends by what TV shows.
No, I do that all the time.
No, don't
you
go there, Claudia.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks
can I just say one more thing?
Sure.
Which is, like, I used to love watching Masterpiece Theater. And now, because there's so much good, weird, so many wonderful, in-depth characters and everything's so weird, I just find, like, all that British stuff is just like too staid for me anymore.
That's so interesting. Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times.
Okay. I would say that one example of non-staid British stuff, I brought a clip. I don't know if we're going to have time for later on, but I mean, we might be able to listen to some Doctor Who. But I would recommend you going that way as a very fresh example of what the Brits are doing.
Well, we aim to please here. I do want to pull up a clip from Doctor Who. And this is for
you,
David.
You're just the best. You're just the best.
And for Claudia as well. The Doctor Who BBC Season 7, Doctor Who, played by Matt Smith, and his traveling companion, Clara, played by Jenna Louise Coleman, are in the space and time traveling machine, the TARDIS, which is about to explode. Let's listen.
We're outside.
No, we're still in the TARDIS.
There's no way across.
No? Okay. You're right.
So what do we do? Time for a plan. Do you have a plan?
Well, no. No plan, sorry.
If you don't have a plan, we're dead.
Yes, we are. So just tell me.
Tell you what?
Well, there's no point now. We're about to die. Just tell me who you are.
You know who I am.
No, I don't. I look at you every single day and I don't understand a thing about you. Why do I keep running into you?
Doctor, you invited me. You said...
Before that, I met you at the Dalek Asylum. There was a girl in a shipwreck and she died saving my life. And she was you.
She really wasn't.
Victorian London, there was a governess who was really a barmaid and we fought the Great Intelligence together. She died and it was my fault. And she was you.
You're scaring me.
What are you, eh? A trick? A trap?
I don't know what you're talking about.
So, David?
The fact that that sounds inexplicable is the joy about it. What he described in two different plot lines were two previous episodes where this actress, we saw her not knowing that she was eventually going to become the eventual companion to this doctor. And so we still don't know the answers to this. And the people who are running it now think along multiple season lines, and so it's so complicated. And that's what people who love Breaking Bad love about that, and people who love Mad Men. You know, the idea that they're thinking ahead. You know, and it's when I compare television to being a novel, that's why.
And that's David Biancooley, our guest today on Radio Times, Fresh Air's TV critic. He's also the founder of TVWorthWatching.com. He's written a number of books, including Dangerously Funny, The Uncensored Story of the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499 about good TV. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY Westchester University Graduate Studies, offering over 70 graduate degree and certificate programs in arts and sciences, business, the arts, education, and health sciences. For more information or to submit an application online, wcupa.edu/grad. Westchester University. Learn more. Westchester University proudly supports WHYY.
Okay, here's a reality check. WHYY gets more than half of our funding from listeners just like you who tune to the radio or our websites to stay informed and be connected to our fast-changing world. We spend about 1% of our broadcast time every year raising money through our membership campaigns. That means that almost 99% of what you hear our programs produce here at WHYY, like Radio Times, Fresh Air, Newsworks Tonight, Voices in the Family, and of course programs from NPR like Morning Edition and All Things Considered, all that costs money. So make a pledge right now at 1-888-345-9499, and you can pledge online at WHYY.org. Today on Radio Times, we're discussing a very important issue, what the U.S. should do about the civil war in Syria. Then we borrowed David Bianculli, Fresh Air's TV critic, to talk about all the good stuff on TV. We do everything here on Radio Times. Make a pledge, 1-888-345-9499. Thanks. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane, talking about good TV with David Bianculli. Let me get Katie from Newark, Delaware to join us. And Katie, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My question is for David, actually, about several TV shows that you've mentioned already. And that's about the popularity of foreign TV shows, especially among the younger group, which myself and my friends. Doctor Who is very popular. Call the Midwife is very popular. Downton Abbey, a show from Australia called House Husbands. How do you feel that, is it possible that the internet is opening up these shows to a wider viewing audience and possibly opening up our viewing patterns to a wider array of shows?
Katie, thanks for the call.
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't think the internet gets credit for it. It's television has been bringing over either adaptations of television or importing them since the 60s and 70s. But there are more places, more homes that are the sort of places where they can germinate properly and grow. I mean, BBC America is a wonderful place for Doctor Who, and instead of floating Doctor Who all by itself, they're bringing in other things like Orphan Black and making a whole supernatural night out of it. And, you know, you have Sci-Fi mm-hmm. Channel doing the same thing. And so with public television bringing in Downton Abbey and then putting Call the Midwife on right after it, it's just a very smart recognition of, well, if we have an audience that's liking this, maybe the same audience, if we expose them to this, will like that too.
Katie, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me play another clip. David brought this in. This is from The Good Wife on CBS Season 4. Gubernatorial candidate Peter Florek, played by Chris, is it Noth?
It's Noth.
Noth, learns about evidence of voter fraud through his wife's legal partner, Will Garner, played by Josh Charles. Let's listen.
Clinton found some evidence. No one else has seen it.
And you're telling me this why?
I want to know what to do with it.
Well, you're the lawyer. You decide.
This decision needs to be the client's.
Why are you doing this?
I need direction.
No, if you needed direction, you'd have given it to Alicia to show me.
I didn't want to hurt her.
You've really handled this poorly.
That's possible.
She's my wife.
Then punch me. It shows your 30,000 votes are fraudulent. If it goes to the judge, you'll lose.
Then I'll lose. This seems to be some kind of a lesson in mutual hypocrisy, which I'm not going to participate in.
So you want me to bury it?
Do what you want. You want me to lose? Show it to the judge. You want me to win? No. I'm not owning this decision.
Scene from The Good Wife.
Can I tell you why that's so great?
Yes, please.
Okay. You have, it's a romantic triangle between Alicia and Peter and Will. So so these two guys don't like each other. Alicia has chosen Peter after having had an affair with Will. So she's back with her husband. It's election day, but Will finds out this fraud that Peter may or may not know about it. Certainly his staffers did it, but we don't know whether Peter did. So we don't know if Peter is being noble or slimy here. We don't know whether Will is being noble or slimy here. And we do find out a few scenes from then that these 30,000 votes, which both of them thought at the time were going to be key to the election, it didn't matter. He won like a 500,000. But It's like we don't know which of these characters – some people are probably looking at that scene and saying, oh, good for you, Peter, and others, good for you, Will. And it's just so well written from every character's perspective.
And it's so great to be on a first-name basis with all these characters on TV.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No.
Look, what else was I going to do for a living? Be a park attendant my whole life?
Let me get Armand from Yardville, New Jersey, to join us on Radio Times. Armand, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Marty. Hi, David.
Hi.
Enjoying your show.
Thank you.
I have a question about delivery, and I'm not sure if it's the subject of your show or not. By delivery, I mean, and I think it was addressed just a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
In the past year, I've added various devices, DVRs, internet, Netflix, a whole alphabet soup. And it's really changed what goes on in this house with respect to viewing, not only content, but style. I mean, profoundly. And I'm not an avid or an enthusiastic, but, you know, I chase it down and watch it. We relax every night. But the whole thing has changed in the last 12 months. And I wonder if what David and Marty feel that is done to content providers and how they're looking at it.
Thank you very much. You nailed it, Armand. Go ahead.
No, if you're the host of the show. He asked us both. Do you want to go first?
Go ahead, David.
All right. Well, it's such a great point because it used to be when everybody after dinner, you know, somebody wanted to watch TV, you watched what was put in front of you. You know, it was like you were going to one restaurant. It had a daily special. That was it. Now there's no menu. It's a grocery store. It all comes to you. You can pick anything you want. And a lot of people come to things late and do binge viewing and just go crazy. But otherwise, you say, I want to watch some television. Well, I've got, 80 hours of stuff stacked up on my own DVR of things I want to see. And it's, what am I in the mood to see? You know, do I have 3 hours so I want to catch up on the last three episodes of The Americans? Or do I watch this movie? That really does change things. And as you hook more things into your television so that you can draw from more sources –
you can never leave your TV room, right?
It's crazy. There's, and I watched too much before. So this to me, while I realize it's progress, it's a death wish. I don't know what I'm doing.
Well, I have to say, I was never much of a TV watcher, and now I've become an avid TV watcher. And in part, the show is about this, which I think, like Armand was describing, is you can control it. You can grab it. You can watch it or not, but do it at your own
leisure.
But
if you don't watch it, it's like we were talking just before the show began. My DVR is set at like 97% constantly. I am panicked to try to watch enough things or erase them or transfer them so that I can catch the next few percent and just keep going, I'm the brooms in the Sorcerer's Apprentice. I'm never going to get this thing done.
Armand, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me ask about a couple of shows. I don't know whether there were big audiences for this or not. One was Top of the Lake, the Jane Campion series, and the other was Rectify. Both on Sundance, which is interesting. Top of the Lake was a sort of a mystery disappearance show set in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
Rectify is about a man who was on death row. DNA evidence gets him out of death row and gets him home. It's his first week at home. Both of these very slow moving, took their time, atmospheric moments of long silence, people looking away.
Yeah, it's like if
what do you make of that?
It's like Michael Antonioni making television. It's not that slow, but they're going after a specific audience, and Sundance hadn't made its own things or brought them over before. So this is a big push for Sundance to be like the next AMC with Walking Dead, and that sort of stuff, and Breaking Bad. But Rectify in particular fascinated me. I have never seen a protagonist of a television show, a series, who was so passive.
Yeah.
He did nothing.
Yeah.
People always wanted to do things for him or to him, and so he had the choice of like, I'll go with you or I won't. But otherwise, he never made a step in any direction. That's fascinating to me.
Well, in fact, I think in your critique on Fresh Air, you compared him to Chauncey Gardner.
Yeah, yeah. And
people projected all this stuff onto him.
Right, and for most part, he didn't say much. And then when he did open up and he said things, it was like, oh, I wish you hadn't said that. You know, that was very – he told a very unsettling story about mm-hmm. about being attacked in prison. And then you have to say, well, is that true?
And, is he really innocent?
Is he guilty? You know, and we don't know the answer to those questions.
I do want to get back to our callers. Looks like we are lining them up at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. David, you mentioned Breaking Bad, and mm-hmm. you're not alone. Many people just adore this series. It's coming back when?
A couple months. For the last episodes, and then it's done. So it's sort of like saying, when it comes back, here are the last chapters, and then this mm-hmm. is over with.
And do you think it was a series, a challenging series, that sustained itself through all those
years? It was one of those beautiful series that got better and better and better and never lost itself and seemed to – it always had – you know, when it was created by Vince Gilligan, he said he wanted to take Mr. Chips and turn him into Scarface. And he's done that. And so it's like – thank you, for having an idea.
Turned meth dealer.
Yes,
right?
Yeah, man.
Let me see what looks like Margaret from Newtown Square has to say. And Margaret, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. I love your program.
Thank you.
And David, I love your commentary. I'm not a big TV watcher. I don't get cable. I never have. My favorite show, I think, one of my very favorite shows in the last decade has been Numbers. And I never hear anything said about it. I thought it was great. It changed over time. The characters changed. I thought it was wonderfully acted, novel-like, great cast.
Margaret,
David Krumholtz and a very good actor. And that was, I think it sort of got lost because it was in the wave of post-CSI shows, and they did an awful lot of visual gimmickry with it because otherwise the idea was using mathematics to solve crime. And I think they were so afraid of doing that without the visual gimmicks that it may have not gotten as much credit for how clever that show really was.
Margaret, thanks for the call to Radio Times. How much do you think HBO and just what – you mentioned The Sopranos as we began our conversation. Mm-hmm. Just how much you think that just elevated the level, the quality of TV?
Oh, I think, Sopranos, Larry Sanders, some of the early shows, Oz, really showed – oh, you can do different things. There are periods in television, NBC when Grant Tinker was there and sort of just told the best people, do what you really want to do and let's put it on and see what happens. HBO did that in its early days. Then Showtime did. And then you have like FX and AMC, and it seems like if a network wants to make a name for itself, it has the template now, but it has to have the executives and the guts to say, all right, I recognize this as being something really different, and then you have to see whether it works. Top of the Lake and Rectify, they're really different.
Yes.
But are they going to make – are they going to be the big breakout hit for Sundance that Walking Dead was for AMC and Breaking Bad? I don't think so, but it's good that they're trying.
We had mentioned sex, so we should mention violence. I mean, it seems that especially on cable and I've – made the mistake of briefly watching Spartacus.
Oh, I'm glad. That's the one that I think is...
I just thought it was so sadistic, so graphic, so even auditorially.
Yes.
So
it's like a video game where just the slow motion blood spatter is the point of it, that I don't like Spartacus. And I don't want to sound like Clint Eastwood talking to a chair, but it's like, I don't like that kind of violence. This Breaking Bad, I like that kind of violence, but that's Spartacus, I guess everybody has limits, but Spartacus is like, no.
It was over your limit. And that's David B. and Cooley, our guest today on Radio Times. If that voice is familiar to you, that's because he's Fresh Air's TV critic, and we invite him on Radio Times from time to time to talk about TV. And he's also the founder of TVWorthWatching.com. And I'm Marty Moscoane, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. We actually, again, we're lining up some phone callers there. We're going to close things out with some of the music from Game of Thrones. And I have to say, the opening to Game of Thrones, the opening to Homeland, the opening to Southland, the opening to a lot of these shows are so interesting. Just the credits. The opening to Rectify was very interesting. What do you think that's about?
Well, I'm finding it out because one of our writers on TV worth watching. Eric Gould is actually doing regular series of articles where he's interviewing the people who do the credits.
Oh,
it turns out they're not the people who do the programs. There's individual shops that do these things, and they are fascinating. And it's so funny. The networks, the broadcast networks, are so worried about losing audiences. They don't want opening credits. They think people will change. But I'm with you. They're fascinating. They set a tone. And I always get happy watching the opening credits, knowing, oh, this is about to come again. And with some shows, and Game of Thrones, I've watched that every week. I still don't fully understand it, but every week
all
I get
the
a little
things
more.
That are moving
yeah,
up
I get a little more, but it's like, thanks for them. Even with the roadmap, I need more help.
And of course, you can probably hum the theme song to Game of Thrones.
But I
as
won't.
Well.
Yes.
We're actually going to close things out. So, looking ahead for the next couple of months, David, what should we be looking for?
Well, the two big exciting things for me are the return of Arrested Development on Netflix, and that's happening in just a few weeks, and then the return of Breaking Bad on AMC in a couple of months. You know, if I have that to look forward to, I'm
life
pretty
is
much
good.
Yeah. Life is. It's going to be a good summer.
Well, and we haven't really talked about any stinkers. I mean, are there?
Oh God!
Are there, I mean, is there one that's on the top of your list there?
I still am. This is an easy target, but you know, Honey Boo Boo. When you have to subtitle the English language so that people can understand what they're saying, why are we watching them at all?
Well, I have to confess that I watch The Real Housewives of blah, 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 blah,
oh,
blah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
And for me, it's I do believe you can watch Top of the Lake
yeah, I
and
know.
The Real Housewives.
Well, clearly you can, but tell me why. Why do you feel – because you need
because
to watch TV to feel superior to those people?
Absolutely.
Or you just want to watch women punch each other?
All that.
It's okay. All right. Okay.
David, always a pleasure. Thank you
so
much.
I'll leave you alone. I'm sorry.
Joining us today on Radio Times, David Biancooley, our guest today on the show. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program. Closing things out with a theme music from HBO's Game of Thrones, composed by Ramin Djawadi. And Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscoe, and thank you so much for joining us.